Welcome to another episode of Compliance Perspectives. I'm Courtney Nordrum from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics, and with me today is Christy Grant Hart, author of How to Be a Wildly Effective Compliance Officer, former Chief Compliance Officer for United International Pictures, and Managing Director of Spark Compliance Consulting. Welcome, Christy.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So for all of our listeners, Christy is from across the pond and has graced us with her presence in Minneapolis on this very snowy and cold day. And so she is actually in studio with me. We talked a little bit previously, Christy, about compliance and communication.
Oh, I think everything comes down to communication. The job obviously requires being really good at the law or regulations or understanding how to build a program. But ultimately, your effectiveness really comes down to how well you can get business buy-in. And that comes from communication, understanding, and from being able to really affect the business on an emotional level.
I completely agree with that. And one of the things that I think might get overlooked sometimes is communicating with people on their level instead of on your level. So talking to them in their words and using kind of the context that they're familiar with, instead of going in. We spoke at lunch today about going into some foreign countries and talking about the federal sentencing guidelines. Mm. Well, that's going to get you nowhere. Do you have any experience with that?
I do. I think you kind of brought up on two different points. The first one, I think, is using people's language. So one of the examples that I use in my book is the idea of using people's words and mirroring them back to them. So for instance, if somebody has a secretary or an admin or a PA or whatever they call the person who works for them, if you use the same term, they're much more likely to feel like you understand their business. So when they're talking about their business using the same language. And I think the second thing you brought up was foreign, right? So I am American. You could probably guess by my accent. But I live in England. I've been there for 5 years. And the program that I've most recently been in charge of was started for 65 countries, none of which were the United States. And I think if you use words like the federal sentencing guidelines and the seven elements, you know, which federal? What are you talking about? It's, you know, the United States federal sentencing guidelines, which don't really resonate in other places. So I think the most important thing to do is to really talk to people about their own local laws and talk to people about, you know, the things that are important both in their culture and in their experience. Compliance, doing the right thing, and ethical business, I think, is a global idea. And there isn't a culture in the world that it doesn't resonate doing the right thing and being a good corporate citizen. But if you don't talk to people in language that they relate to, you'll lose them.
So you actually advocate in your book about going and doing some research, looking, using the internet and the Google to find what people are saying, how they say it, and kind of what they connect to. Have you found that this has been helpful?
Oh, absolutely. I have been extremely lucky. I have trained in 40 countries on 5 continents in the last 3 years. And one of the things I try really to do before I go is go through a checklist of topics to understand. Wherever I'm going, you know, what is the local religion? What is the minority religion? How do people generally feel about women and women in business? Because I am an American, you know, how do they feel about Americans? It can really color how the conversations start. But also things like, you know, what are the local favorite foods? Are there animals that are considered sacred or important or that no one would eat? You know, really trying to get an understanding of the place before I arrive. And then arriving curious, simply being excited to be there and to see what they have to teach me.
I was reading in your book, you said that one of the most interesting experiences you had was you sat down to dinner and you were served a curried cow brain.
It is true, yes.
And you politely took a bite and then moved on to something perhaps a little bit more palatable to your taste. But the willingness to try something indigenous and to try something local probably helps your credibility in the context of the people you're working with. They can relate to you. They say, okay, she's willing to try our food. She's at a restaurant that we like to eat at. Versus, you know, insisting on going to a McDonald's and having McNuggets no matter what country you're in.
Yeah, that was fascinating. That was actually in Indonesia. And the first place that they had taken me to was, in fact, a pizzeria. And pizza in Indonesia and my experience wasn't fantastic. And I just said, you know, well, okay, this is great and thank you so much. But, you know, for dinner, is there, can you take me to your favorite place? And so they really enjoyed taking me out. But one of the places we went to, they had small plates of all types of different food, and they brought them all to the table, one of the, which was the curried cow brain. But they also had things like fried chicken and rice and whatnot. But I got to try it all. And at the end of the meal, the server took the things off the table and served it to the next table. So anything that hadn't been touched by our table was just served to the next one, and that's how they did it. And I thought, oh my gosh, you know, this would be against every health and safety standard in America. But, you know, you're there, you go with it. And it was a great time.
You can't see me, but my jaw just dropped when she told me that story. I don't know how I would have handled it. Personally, I'm a little bit of a germaphobe. But I can bet that they probably thought that you were the coolest American compliance officer ever.
Well, being that I was their only American compliance officer, that's certainly true.
Maybe the coolest American. You came in and you had an open mind and you were willing to go to their favorite restaurant and learn something about what they wanted versus kind of imposing what you wanted. And that brings me to a second point, which is really speaking to what people need, what their needs are versus what you want them to hear.
Yeah, I think that sometimes we're so busy trying to run our program or get our next initiative done that we forget that, honestly, the most effective, in my experience, the best way to be effective is to simply ask the business what it needs. You know, what do you want from me? And if you can satisfy what the business wants first or what its highest priority is, you end up with a reciprocity that is much more effective in getting what you need done. So I think always trying to come at it from, you know, how can I help you? How can I serve you? What do you need? Is really pretty effective in getting them on board when you have to ask a favor that you've gotten there.
And it would probably serve you well to getting past the, oh, compliance just says no. Compliance is only here to stop us from doing things. So when you go in with the attitude that says, what can I do for you? What problems can I solve? What do you need? Then they're going to stop thinking about all of the times that you say no, 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 and more of the times that you're helping them solve a problem.
Yeah, and I think even in how you say no, it can really make a difference. If you come at it with the automatic belief that whatever it is, you're suspect, you're not sure, you don't trust them, they're going to pick up on that intuitively and know that you're coming at them with that energy. Whereas if you come to things with an open mind and with the idea that if we can make this work, I'm going to help you to do that. I think one of the best ways to approach things is as a problem solver with the business. So you say to them, okay, what is it you want to do? And maybe the way they want to do it isn't legal or ethical or possible, but maybe we can get to the same outcome if we do it a different way. And so how I've tried to approach the business when they've brought me problems that I just, you know, couldn't say yes the way they wanted me to, is to see, is there another way? And if there isn't, explaining why there isn't. Because when people are treated like adults and they understand the problem, usually they can understand why you've said no and you maintain your credibility.
That's another great point that you bring up. When you actually explain to them why you're saying no, instead of just saying no. Here at the SCCE, our CEO, Roy, has a very hard and fast rule. And that rule is when you say no, you tell someone why and you be honest about it.
Hmm.
So when you say no, tell them why you're saying no. There is a lot of power in saying no. And I think that you can actually build from a no.
Oh, absolutely. And the other thing you can do is when you're using no as an opportunity to educate, then you teach the business what it needs to bring you so you can say yes. So if you explain why a policy, you know, why it's against policy to do something, the next time they come back, they say, okay, well, this isn't against the policy. So maybe we can do it in a different way. And over time, you end up with leaders who not only understand the policies in a more real way or a way that they can apply, you also end up with them looking to work with compliance or coming up with solutions that are compliant so that they can move forward in what they want to do.
We all love it when everyone comes up with solutions that are compliant.
Indeed.
In the book, there are a lot of tips about communication. One of them talks about saying no. The psychology is that when someone has said no to you, they don't want to continue to say no. They don't want to disappoint.
Right. people think that somehow lawyers in particular, you know, have this reputation that it's fun to say no. But actually, human beings, most human beings at their core like saying yes. And I like to use the example of, you know, when I was younger, I wanted to get my ears pierced. And my mother said that I had to be 16. And I asked her over and over and over again until she was so tired of saying no that she finally said yes when I was 12. Clearly, I was destined to be a lawyer. But she, but what that is a lot of times if you need something, say from the CEO or from the board or from the managers, you know, if you ask for something really big and someone has to tell you no, one of the sort of sneaky ways is to ask for something smaller immediately afterward, because people tend to feel guilty and don't like saying no. So if they can then say yes to another request, that's sometimes one way to do it. And the other thing is to first ask for something, you know, bigger than you really think you can get, and then ask for the thing that you really want. And sometimes just going through that process of hearing, you know, getting away from the disappointment of saying no and letting someone make you happy can actually be pretty effective.
And what do you say to the people who are listening and the people who are reading your book who say using these kind of psychological techniques is some sort of unethical practice?
Yeah.
Do you have a retort to that?
I do have a retort, in fact. When I first did my talk on selling compliance to the business in London last year, one of the people in the audience got really angry. I mean, she stood up in the question and answer and she said, "I think what you're doing is unethical." And I thought, oh, my really? Heavens, I'm at an ethics and compliance conference being called unethical.
Uh-oh.
She said, you know, we've been at this conference all week and everyone's talking about, you know, the importance of an ethical culture and being positive about compliance and not using fear. And she said, you're teaching people how to use fear, manipulate with fear. And certainly there is some of that in my book and in my talk. But I hearken back to what some of the social scientist researchers said. One of them said, social science and persuasion is ethically neutral. It's what you do with it that counts. So if we're using psychology and techniques to get to a good end, I suppose I'm a bit Machiavellian in that, you know, we have a good outcome by helping the business to do the right thing.
Well, Christy, it has been wonderful having you on today. I appreciate you coming in. And for all of our listeners, we will have all of Christy's information and links to her book and her bio and her LinkedIn profile all on the blog with this podcast. So thank you so much, Christy.
Thank you so much, Courtney.